Orchids are really among my favorite flowers. They are stunning, perfect, so perfect looking sometimes it's hard to believe they're real. And we have a worldwide expert on orchids right here in Wisconsin, and he's with me in the studio today. Chuck Aker is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. He also propagates and sells orchids through his own business. It's called Flasks by Chuck Aker. Not only a great deal of information to share, but stories that sound something out of Indiana Jones almost. Don't they, Chuck?
Yeah, indeed. You'd wonder what goes on in this orchid world with these crazy orchid collectors and such. And yeah, Indiana Jones really comes to mind with some of these stories.
Well, we'll talk about some of those stories, but also we'll talk obviously about orchids and answer your questions. You can call in 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. Hey, have you got a nice photo of an orchid? Put it up. We'd love to see that as well. If you have a question, you can also post it right there. And there's an orchid event coming up, not this coming, well, in a week, another week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to talk about that as well with Chuck. So lots to do here today. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. What defines orchids from other flowers, Chuck?
Well, there are several things. The most definitive aspect of the orchid family is orchids are all monocots. That's a typical plant of a family of plants that has a certain section of cells and development to the plant morphology. So that's one big thing. They're all monocotyledons. One of the other things that really the average person can depict an orchid from other flowers is that they're always generally a six-segmented flower having three sepals and three petals. And one of the petals is often a modified petal, and it would be what's considered the lip of the flower. And in some cases, like the lady slipper orchid, that lip is actually the pouch or the bucket of that orchid. So those are really the two main things. The other thing is really that the orchid is considered a hermaphrodite. It can reproduce in amongst itself with its own flower. It can be self-pollinated and reproduce on its own. It doesn't need another one of its kind to actually reproduce. So the orchid flower has both sexual reproductive parts to it, and thus when we want to propagate a certain species, we can actually just self-pollinate that bloom and create a seed pod and grow out and produce pretty much exact replicas of that same species. So those are really the three main things that define orchid from many of the other plant families.
And there are so many orchid types. And how many are there in the wild species?
Well, at last count, I believe they were up to about 30,000. Now, there's a little discrepancy there with the taxonomists, whether you consider yourself what they call a lumper or a splitter. And the difference between the two is that there's some varieties of species in that family of species. So you can have one or two sub-varieties in there. Some taxonomists will consider that those actually separate species, and other taxonomists will consider it just one of the same species. So that has a lot to do with it. Anywhere between 25 and 30,000 really is the average count that people normally use. And then, of course, with all the hybrids that are going on that are being made by, man, yeah, us crossing and, breeding and creating new types of orchids. At last count, the Royal Horticultural Society had their database, I believe, produced 156,000 registered hybrids of orchids.
Wow.
So that's a pretty daunting number, too. They also consider that there's at least that many unregistered hybrid orchids floating around that aren't registered with the Royal Horticultural Society and thus don't have a registered name to them, but they are out there being sold, they're flowering, and they're in people's collections, and it's just a huge plant family, and it continues to get bigger every day.
It's wonderful. Chuck Aker, our guest today, as we talk with him about orchids. Lee in Cambridge Thanks for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, cymbidiums and oncidiums.
Ah.
Yeah, and basically watering and fertilizing. You know, I have several books on orchids, and yet I can't get the results. Now, I'm not talking about cymbidiums, naturally. Or and anyway, what I'm after is on most of my orchids, except the cymbidiums, I let them get pretty dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually use either deionized water or rainwater or my dehumidifier water.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll fertilize it very lightly. And then I'll submerge the plants, just let them get soaked.
Okay. And you're having more trouble with your oncidium than you are your cymbidium, you stated?
Oh, no, the oncidiums are a group that were just taken off a huge plant.
Okay.
And they're doing fine. They're small and they're going very well.
Okay.
But the cymbidiums, which basically in California, they're an outdoor plant.
Correct.
And they don't have to have the dry period, I think, that the other orchids do.
No, not so much. The cymbidium really responds setting its flowers to the cooler nighttime temperature, which we normally automatically receive here in the Midwest by, you know, September, October, November. You see that climatic change. So we highly recommend growing your cymbidium orchid, you know, outdoors through the months of May into, the end of October, and really try to threaten to freeze the plant, but of course don't freeze it. Push that threshold, leaving it outdoors till it's very, very cold. And when you do have to finally bring it in because it's freezing every night, find a room or an area that is still very, very cool, you know, 45, 50 at night, and it really doesn't matter what it gets to in the day. It has to be in a cooler climate yet in order for it to set spike. So if you bring it in the end of October when it's freezing outside and put it in your warm house, it has not set flower spike yet, so it still needs another month or 6 weeks of that cool climate. We often recommend people to put their cymbidium in their garage if they have a small window and just hang it right in the window there where it's experiencing the unheated aspect of the garage and things like that, or three season porches that are somewhat protected. You know, it might get quite cold out there, but not actually frost or freeze. So those are, that's really important.
It still needs the light, though.
Yeah, they still need the light, but it's not as important as the temperature. So for those few months, you can sacrifice some of that light level, get that temperature down, especially at night, and that's what sets spike on them. Our care sheet posted on our website at orchidsgardencenter.com is quite informative about the cymbidium culture and where to place the plants, when, and why. If you can get on that, feel free to take a look at that.
I split up some big plants. They had like 10 bulbs on them, and I didn't get a good bloom set out of any of them this year.
That's pretty typical. When they're divided, it kind of sets them back a little bit, but they'll recover from that, and they'll make up for that the next 2 to 3 years. So, yeah, that first year after splitting is a little rough.
Yeah.
Is it the fertilizing aspects of the other orchids? I can't get the results that I see in the supermarkets and in your shop, and I'm wondering just how. You know, the books I have say, you know, fertilize weekly, and I do that, but have never seen the generous blooms out of the very sparse vegetation that I often see in some of the commercially grown plants, and I'm wondering, you know, how do they do it?
Well, those commercially grown plants are, you know, obviously grown in an ideal situation, which the home environment is less than. You can't really expect to have those results all the time. However, there's a lot of our customers growing at home under those home conditions that do get from year to year a great bounty of bloom. And it really has more to do with how the plant responded to how much light it got, you know, what the season was like that we had. If we had a cloudy periods, you know, or a real hot periods and things like that, the plants all respond to. So from year to year, you will see a difference in your flower production on these orchids, which is not uncommon at all. And fertilizing, there's tons of different ways to go about it, and there's tons of different fertilizers to use. What we personally do and advocate to do is to feed a balanced all-purpose plant food, such as a 20-20-20, 1 to 2 times a month in most cases throughout the year. Sometimes in the summer when you're watering a lot more, you can maybe feed a little bit more, but that sometimes is overrated as well. And that's really about it. It's pretty straightforward.
Some of the feeds or some of the recommendations I've seen include calcium in the mixture. And the feeds I've been buying, both a bloom and a normal growth fertilizer, neither of them have calcium in them. Is that a good ingredient to look for?
Well, it is if you're using water as a purified source of water. You had mentioned that you were using some DI or dehumidified water and such. That's a very low mineral water that has no natural cal or mag to it. So you have to find a fertilizer that supplements that. And there are fertilizers out there that do that. They're just blended for rainwater or reverse osmosis water, and you can pick some of that stuff up at our place or check your local garden centers for it as well. And that does help if you're using purified water sources. Otherwise, just use some tap water once in a while. That will give you some elevated cal and mag levels to a safe level. You don't want to use that kind of water all the time, but using it once in a while to bring that cal and mag up is certainly recommended.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. So the regular water out of the tap isn't a good thing to be feeding the plants all the time, at least.
Well, in most cases, it's not. The water around this part gets quite hard, high in alkaline and bicarbonates and sodium in some cases. So all those things are kind of rough on some of the orchid roots. There are places that have good water. A simple test or by us or calling your local water municipality, they'll give you the numbers of where you're at with some of these levels and so on. But if you've got a real high mineral water, it certainly is best to catch some rainwater and dilute it down a little bit or use the rainwater exclusively on it. The orchids really, really respond to a more purified water source such as rainwater, reverse osmosis, and things like that.
Michelle in Fitchburg, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question pertains to my daughter. I'm kind of an orchid novice. I don't grow them, and when I get one for a gift, it always dies.
Uh-oh.
I know. But she loves orchids. She's getting married in August.
Uh-huh.
She wants to have orchids for her centerpieces on her table.
Okay.
And I think my question's been answered. It sounds like summer is a good bloom time for them, so it shouldn't be a problem getting orchids at that time of the year, correct?
Well, we have flowering orchids in abundance pretty much 12 months of the year now. We manipulate the crop to do so, so we can have sales. And yes, we do situations like that, wedding table arrangements all the time nowadays. The orchid plant has far better value to it than a bouquet of cut flowers on your table arrangement. And your guests can, you know, play a little raffle at the table to see who takes it home. And
that's exactly what she wants to do.
Yeah, we do that so much more nowadays because people, again, see the value in the blooming orchid, especially the Phalaenopsis orchid, which will bloom literally for 2 to 4 months. So you can't beat that.
Okay. And then is that a colored one? Or she wants white. White, white, white.
Mm-hmm. Well, they come in a barrage of colors. And yes,
okay.
White is the most popular used at that time. We also have a beautiful white with a pink center and a little pink blush to it. It's very popular for the wedding clientele as well. So, yeah, we can certainly accommodate you. Come on out and talk to me, and we'll get something down on paper and start cropping for it. I like to know about 90 days out if I'm going to do something like that so I can crop for it.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for calling, Michelle.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chuck Aker, our guest today, is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. He also propagates and sells orchid through his own business, Flasks by Chuck Aker. And we've got both websites up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so you can go there and click right on and get to those sites. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking orchids today on this edition of Garden Talk with Chuck Aker, who's with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in on this edition of Garden Talk. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. Got a nice photo of an orchid. We'd love to see that. Or you can post your question there as well. We do have an email from Susie in Genesee. Interesting question here. She says, I'm building a large terrarium, 36 by 18 by 36, that will be home for some red-eye tree frogs, lights, water misters, mosses, and plants, etc. Can you recommend orchids that would be happy and healthy in such an environment? Any other ideas for small flowering plants that wouldn't be too messy over my pseudo rainforest floor?
Yeah, it's creating a little microclimate going on there, and we have so many customers doing this now because it is quite fun having just little vivariums going like that, little terrariums and so on. And yes, we have countless little orchid species and varieties that can be suitable for that situation. One of which I have right in front of us here. It's Angraecum scottianum is the species, and I believe it comes from Madagascar. It's a diminutive little plant that's mounted on a little piece of grapevine wood. Tiny little thing, blooms 2 to 3 times a year with a beautiful fuchsia pink flower. Really, really small,
really
growing.
Pretty.
Suitable as heck for stuff like that. And again, we've got countless other varieties that are mounted like that that she could hang in there, as well as other small growing orchid varieties in pots that she could also either, you know, just leave in the pot and kind of bury in the floor, or directly plant in her floor, depending on what the substrate of her floor actually is in that vessel. So, yeah, there's a lot of things out there by us now. We've got a whole bunch of new species orchids and miniature orchids in production.
And, Susie, Judith took a photo of that orchid and with Chuck holding it, and she's putting it up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So wait a minute or two and go to the page, and you'll see Chuck holding that flower. You'll get an idea what it looks like.
Yeah, it's cool.
And you would have others, obviously, also up on your website, too.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Debbie in Whitewater, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I currently have two Phalaenopsises, one of which I've had for about 2 years, and it was my understanding that orchids kind of have a bloom and rest cycle. But the larger of the two plants has bloomed literally nonstop for 2 years. I'm not complaining. I mean, at the moment, it has a flower stalk on it that's over 2 feet long.
Right.
And I just want to make sure that, you know, I shouldn't be lopping it off or something for the health of the plant.
Well, there are those Phalaenopsis varieties that tend to bloom themselves silly. And there might be a day of reckoning where the plant all of a sudden has given it all and you know, just totally expires on you. But, you know, they certainly are easily replaced. I would just go ahead and enjoy that thing and let it bloom to its heart content. The thing that I worry about most is just watching the leaves on that plant, and if they start to get a little limp or flaccid or leathery looking and feeling, that's when you're going to want to take action and cut those flower spikes off. We'll try to get a repot job involved right then and check the roots and so on before you lose it totally. We have so many customers will just let them go beyond repair, you know, and that's just too far to go on. But once you notice those leaves getting a little limp and leathery, that's when you want to address the situation.
Great. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Appreciate the call. Arlene in New Berlin. Hi to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having this program. I'm calling about... I've tried growing Phalaenopsis, and I know they're the easiest ones to grow, but I don't have a green thumb. But anyway, my brother sent me two bottles of a plant formula. One is red, and the other one is like a blue. It's called, it's by the company Grow More mm-hmm. Orchid Premium mm-hmm. Orchid Food. One mm-hmm. is for growth, and the other one is for bloom.
Yep.
How much... When it doesn't, it tells you when to do it. One is for bloom time and one is for rest time. But how much do you put in? Oh, I see. I didn't see it that well. It says a tablespoon of water in a gallon of water.
Yeah, you know, and that's a little steep. I probably wouldn't go quite that strong. You know, the fertilizer companies like to sell their product, and that's a little strong.
Yeah, my brother sent it to me from California because
right.
he has some orchids that are to die for. I've never seen, and my daughter is growing hers too now.
Sure.
Okay, the best side of the house to grow them on.
Well, your Phalaenopsis typically like that eastern exposure where they'll get that full morning sunshine if it's not too hot. So don't be afraid to let that morning sun shine on those leaves.
The only problem is that there's only one small window on the east side and the garage is in the way. So now what do I do?
Do you have a south or a west-facing exposure?
I have a beautiful patio door that faces south.
Okay. Well, you've got plenty of light there for sure. Only thing in the summertime, your south exposure here in Wisconsin gets to be a little dull, so you might want to move it, you know, to your west or something for that period. But otherwise, you're pretty good. Watch out for that direct wintertime south sun. That can burn the Phalaenopsis leaves, especially in a big, you know, window exposure like that. You get snow on the ground, it really makes a lot of difference.
Okay, but, well, thank you very much for your information.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And Carla in Dubuque, Iowa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you. Okay, I'm kind of new to the orchids, so this is the first. I bought them last year. Well, of course, they were already blooming.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious when I should expect them to bloom. Hopefully they do. And if there's something special I should do.
Okay, what type of orchid do you have there? Do you know?
They're the ones that everybody sells at all the stores. That's all I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, the Phalaenopsis. Yeah. Yeah. So if they're currently not sending up a flower spike right now this season, I would recommend to take the plant or plants to a room that has a much cooler nighttime temperature to it. Do you have a spare bedroom or a downstairs room, or sometimes even setting them on the floor versus up on the table or shelf is enough degrees difference to get that bloom spike started. Usually it takes about 4 to 6 weeks of that cooler nighttime temperature to induce the bloom spike. So try that, you know, that's the first thing you want to do is get that nighttime temperature dropped down. And once you see the bloom spike actually emerging from the plant and you notice that it is indeed happening, you can go ahead and move it back to where you had it in the nice light, nicely lit situation. Yeah.
So even if I put it like in the basement at night and bring it up during the day?
Absolutely. If you want to go through that, that's
cold
fine.
Cold down there. So.
Yeah. That's all it takes. You know, most of the Phalaenopsis respond naturally to our cooling of the climate, you know, in the fall, early winter here. But there's some cases where, you know, we heat our houses adequately. We go from, you know, the air conditioning to the heat right away and stuff. There's no climatic change that the plant is recognized. And that's really what stimulates the flower spikes on these Phalaenopsis is that climatic change of that cooler climate, both day and night, actually. So if you've got light downstairs at all and it's cool down there, take it down there and leave it down there.
There's not enough light.
Okay. Kind of forget about it, kind of neglect it and things like that. The orchid does thrive on a little, you know, change in its culture. That's what stimulates them to flower generally in nature, too. There's something in the climate that has changed, whether it's a drought season or a cool season or a bright season. So that's what you want to do with that is get that cool.
Okay. And now should I be like watering it like every week or because it's the food that I bought for it said to fertilize it like every week.
Yeah. Do you know, is it growing in a bark based mix or is it in a sphagnum moss type mix?
I have two. One is in the bark and the other one is in the moss.
Okay. Well, you'll be watering distinctly different there. Your bark-based mix, usually every 7 to 10 days, a good flushing at the sink where you really run the water through it and fertilize it maybe once or twice a month. Your moss-based mix, you don't water much with that at all. Basically, you get it wet. It's not really flushing because the water doesn't run through it. So once it's damp, it'll stay wet for 2 to 3 weeks, sometimes even more. So just watch that. Make sure that it does get dry between your waterings. Mm-hmm. And with sphagnum moss, you fertilize much, much less as well. Usually like once every 2 months is adequate in a home environment.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're a little different there. Maybe sometime you can get them repotted both in the same substrate, and that way you can take care of them both identically then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And does it matter now, because I'm thinking maybe the one needs to be repotted. It's kind of leaning over. The leaves are pretty big.
Yeah, when they start to lean like that, they should get repotted, and we can straighten that back up. You know, feel free to bring it out by us. Oh, you're quite a ways away, so probably not convenient. But when you repot it, try to get it straightened up in its pot.
Now, is it best to just put it in a regular clay pot?
We really prefer the plastic for the Phalaenopsis due to the porosity of the clay that tends to build up a lot of minerals and salts, and the Phalaenopsis root really does not care for that. Just put it in a generic, nice plastic pot, and then you can set that inside of another more decorative ceramic pot if you want the look of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Carla. Thank you so much for calling. Chuck Aker, our guest, talking orchids with him, and Marilyn and Cable, I give you a chance next. By the way, we have some open lines now, finally. You can get on at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. A question about orchids or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. And Marilyn, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, good morning from Snowy Cable up here, way up north. I'm looking at three orchids that I have in bloom right now, two Phalaenopsis, and I've got one that, unfortunately, I can't send you the picture. My husband has a digital camera, but I've lost the tag from, but it's a fragrant orchid,
okay,
and it has longer, more slender iris-type leaves with the bulbous base, you
right.
know, near the and it's just gorgeous. It
right.
looks like a almost like a tortoise with mottled green and brown areas, and then a flare at the bottom with purple, and
sure.
it's got a slight fragrance. And I'm not sure now. I've lost its tag over the last year or so, and not sure of the care. Would you have any idea what that might be?
Well, it sounds like you have a Cymbidium orchid.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the look of a Cymbidium plant and flower structure?
Well, I think I picked this up in Chicago at a mixed market type of thing, and I've normally grown Phalaenopsis, and this is the only one of this type that I have. Because I have a Miltonia, Miltonius, and this is not that.
Right, right. Check.
And this is fragrant. It has a lovely, very soft fragrance to it, and it's just lovely with five blooms right now that look almost like tortoises.
Yeah, yeah. Well, get on Google and, you know, just punch in Cymbidium. It's, you want to spell it. It's very simple. Cymbidium.
Okay.
Punch that in, and you'll find all kinds of great pictures and information there. We don't have a lot of specific pictures of Cymbidiums up on our website currently, but you'll be able to tell if that's the type of plant you have. It's a very distinctive-looking plant.
Right, and it's got the bulbous right near at the base of the leaves, near the where the floret comes up from. And
correct.
I'm just enjoying it so much.
Yeah,
because,
good.
And I did have a tip for people. I've grown Phalaenopsis for quite a while up here in the Northwoods, and they do well. Though I don't get year-round blooms, after the blooms have faded completely and the spike is pretty much empty, I will cut it back, though, to a node or two below, and I oftentimes get a second flowering spike from that.
Absolutely. Phalaenopsis are grand for doing that. They'll bloom two or three times on one stem like that. Absolutely. Our care sheet posted on our website explains that exact technique, you bet.
Good. Well, thank you for the help.
Well, send me a picture if you can't find out what that is. Go to our website, orchidsgardencenter.com, and just send it off to that, and we'll take a look at that.
All right. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see. Let's go to Gail in Lake Mills next. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I have a couple of different types of orchids, including Phalaenopsis and a few others. I've been growing orchids in my bathroom, which has a skylight, now for about 10 years.
Awesome.
And I usually have pretty good success with blooms. My question is, I have recently transplanted many of them, and I got a different type of bark that's a very fine grain bark.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is how do I know which type of a bark to use with which orchids?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of them out there, and there's a lot of things being sold that are dubbed orchid potting bark and so on. It's really not the greatest stuff from what I've seen. It looks like something you'd want to throw around your shrubs outside, actually.
Yeah.
The fine bark is not a bad thing. Just remember that the finer the mix, you know, the more dense that it is, the less air is around those roots, and subsequently the slower the plant will dry out. So it may take, you know, upwardly to 2 weeks for your pot to become, you know, dry enough for another watering.
Right.
That's the only thing.
I've noticed that they stay wet longer.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. The bark we usually use for most of the Phalaenopsis is what's called the medium bark, and the chunks are anywhere from 1/2 inch to about 5/8 inch in size. And then, of course, that's mixed with peat moss and perlite, so you've got a blend there. And that's our standby mix for just about everything that we grow in, except some of the small seedlings, which we will then use that finer or smaller chunk bark. So
the smaller orchids really are the ones to put in that finer grain.
Typically, yes, but I don't think you're going to have too much of a problem there with your Phalaenopsis, just as long as you know that it is going to take longer to dry out and you'll just have to adjust your watering. I mean, I've grown Phalaenopsis in a finer mix like that successfully. It's one of those things where you can't water as often and subsequently can't feed as often and so on. But the plants usually do okay if you don't rot them out.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Well, thanks,
Gail.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Chuck Aker, our guest with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery. He has his own business as well called Flasks by Chuck Aker. We've got both up on my Facebook page. We also have up on the Facebook page some information from the Orchid Growers Guild, which Chuck plays a very important role in. There's the Orchid Quest 2013, and it's coming up February 2nd and 3rd. I've been there many times. It's always a lot of fun, Chuck.
That is a really great show. You know, in this part of the country, you know, you wouldn't think that something of that magnitude happens. But I got to be honest with you, and I'm not blowing our own horn here, but that show is probably one of the best shows in a 8 or 10 hour drive of this area. It's just the people involved with putting this on have done such a remarkable job over the years and have fine-tuned, you know, everything involved with it. We take up 1/3 of the Alliance Center out there, which is about 30,000 square feet. We've got 17 different plant vendors coming in this year, so there's just going to be a plethora of orchids to be had there from these vendors selling their wares. The exhibit room that's there is just absolutely daunting due to the fact that this is the time of the year that orchids are in their peak bloom season. This show couldn't be a better venue to see. There's so many different types of orchids flowering right now that, you know, I've been doing this all my life, and when I walk through that exhibit room, I see things that, you know, I've never seen ever, you know, only maybe read about or seen a picture in a book or on the internet of, but seeing it in real life, that's, you know, being such a large plant family, it's just an absolutely amazing show. There's a bunch of artists vending there with, you know, decorative pottery and cups and things like that. It's really, really a great show. We also have a pretty good attendance of some seminars that go on, too. On Saturday, there's 3 seminars, and Sunday, there's 3 seminars, and one of which that we're super proud to have is both Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. We have Tom Miranda, who is the curator of the orchid curator of the Smithsonian Institution.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is amazing. His writing and his presentations, I read his article in the Orchid Magazine published by American Orchid Society every month, and the man is just amazing. He's going to explain a lot about why the orchid captures our human psyche, which is very, very interesting. We've got other programs going on, too, on Saturday at 1 o'clock. Herman Pigors, a former owner of Oak Hill Gardens in Dundee, Illinois, has a great simplified program called The Nuts and Bolts about growing orchids. You can sit in on that, and he makes it just so simple and easy to understand. Herman's been doing this, you know, too, for about 50 or 60 years. At 2:30 on Saturday, there's a great program from a gentleman from the Iowa Orchid Society. He's actually going to talk about the World Orchid Conference in Singapore of 2011. He attended that, took some great photos, has a great dissertation about that. Then on Sunday again, of course, Tom Miranda speaks again at 11 a.m. And at 12:30, we've got a gentleman here from The DNR, Ryan O'Connor, is going to be talking about the rare and native orchids of Wisconsin. So this is going to be a really cool program if you're into the natives and things like that, if you've got cypripediums in your yard. And at 2 o'clock, we've got an Orchid Growers Guild member who's going to put on a presentation about basement growing. And this gentleman, Gary Brendan-Mule, has a really, really great setup and is an expert at growing orchids in a less than a greenhouse situation. So you can sit in and pick up on some tips there. Most people we have in our customer clientele are running out of room on their windowsills. And, you know, they constantly ask, you know, how can I set up a little room? Well, Gary is going to really explain that well, because he has done a great job in setting his growing area up. So it's really an amazing show, and an absolutely amazing show.
I've had always had a lot of fun there, and I tell you, I have never been there that I didn't walk away with some flowers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to resist.
You cannot walk away with that's the only problem sometimes.
That's a huge problem. We have people walking by our table just grinning, you know, and their arms are just loaded with bags and boxes. And, you know, they do have a plant check. So you buy something, you take it to the plant check room, and you unload your wares, you go around, hit some more tables. So, yeah, it's really, really a cool event. Highly recommended on a cold winter day for sure.
February 2nd and 3rd at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. And great parking there, and everything is easy to get to. And
absolutely.
Lots of fun. So glad we could talk about that. And certainly we're still ready and willing to answer your orchid questions or hear your own stories about orchids. Larry Mueller here, Chuck Aker with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking orchids today with Chuck Aker of Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. And again, questions, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We were talking about the big show that's February 2nd and 3rd here in Madison. There are some other shows around, too, for people who are not able to get to the Madison area.
Yeah. You know, all around the upper Midwest here in the next 4 to 6 weeks, there's shows within anywhere from an 8 to 10 hour drive. As a matter of fact, today our company is going to be representing our wares at two different venues. My boss, Kent, and his wife, Cheryl, are on their way to Grand Rapids, Michigan for an orchid show that we're going to represent there. And my co-worker, Lindsay, and our helper, Tom, they're on their way to St. Paul, Minnesota to represent us at a show there. So, yeah, double whammy this weekend, and then we go into Orchid Quest next weekend. So there's a lot of orchids going on. Yeah. But there's shows, literally, if you get onto the American Orchid Society's website, there's shows literally all around this area for the next almost 2 to 3 months. So, yeah, if you're not right here in Madison, there's definitely one close to you. I'll guarantee it.
Janie in Arcadia, thank you for calling, and thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I was gifted a cymbidium in a 9-inch pot, and it was packed solid with tubers. And I've never repotted it in the past 3 years, although I keep it's alive and happy.
Okay.
And sends up new stalks, but there are a number of dormant tubers in there.
Right.
Are they dead or are they dormant?
Well, when they've lost their leaves, they're considered pretty much dormant. I mean, it's still alive. If you squeeze that leafless pseudobulb, you'll notice it's probably still solid. So it's still a somewhat active part of the plant. At the time of repotting, you know, it sounds like that plant is a really good candidate for dividing.
3 years ago.
Yeah, right. 3 years ago. But it's probably a good candidate for dividing. When they get that big and you start losing leaves in the middle and you've got these leafless pseudobulbs going, you've got to get the big butcher knife out and close your eyes and just go right down the middle of that darn thing.
Drive it to Wanakee and have your people do it?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, we'll take care of that. Yeah, it's not a pretty sight, so you might not want to watch.
That's why I haven't done it because I'm afraid of hurting it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, wait a couple of months, though. This is not the time of the year to be chopping a cymbidium in half because the days are too short and they're not really actively growing at the moment. So wait till, like, you know, February, March. And
All right.
Yeah, then we'll get it divided and cleaned up for you. Get it potted properly. That way you can let it grow in that pot then for another 3 to 5 years.
Fantastic.
All right. Thanks, Janie. Thanks for calling. And let's see, an email from Kathy who says, I have two Phalaenopsis orchids that bloomed for at least 4 months during the winter, and that was in 2008. Then again the following spring, and now they're refusing to bloom again. Repotted last year, feeding them orchid food. They're in the same window. What am I doing wrong?
You might have to have a talk with those plants.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I would probably want to ask her how those leaves have developed in the last 12 to 18 months, that if she's put on some nice leaf or two on the top of that plant. That's really important that the plant is able to recharge itself by putting out these new leaves. Essentially, each new leaf that the Phalaenopsis grows from start to finish to maturity in a season is essentially one flower spike. So maybe she didn't get some good growth on it, or the growth is perhaps weak and, you know, just doesn't have enough energy. She could send me an email of a picture of the plant. You know, I'd be able to, you know, decipher whether that plant's growing properly. If it is growing properly and no bloom spikes coming, again, I would recommend her to put that plant in an area that is substantially cooler than where she's currently growing it, just to try to, you know, shock that plant into sending up that bloom spike, because it's either growing very, very well and it's too happy and needs that climatic shock, or it didn't grow well enough to have enough energy to actually bloom. So try either one of those things. Send me a picture of those leaves or put that thing in a cool room.
All right. Okay, and let's go to Barbara in Wausau. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I have a Dodgeridium mini pink, which I've had for 3 years, and it is currently in bloom, but it has a stem on it from the previous bloom, and it has a seed pod on it.
Okay.
Should they be cut off, or is it worth trying to keep it and do something with it?
Well, it depends on your wherewithal. Growing orchids from seed is quite an elaborate technique. I mean, it needs to be grown in a sterile nutrient agar solution, basically almost laboratory-type condition initially. So, you know, a lot of people have tried that on their kitchen table to flask orchid seed, but the average person really doesn't have the know-how or the equipment and the materials to do so. So I would recommend cutting that off so the plant can put its energies into, you know, producing its flower spikes and its new growth and so on. Because producing the seed pod does take a bit of energy out of the plant. So if you're not going to truly use the seed, yes, cut it off.
Typically, how long does it take to germinate a seed and get a plant?
Well, on average, you're talking anywhere from 3 to 7 years.
Wow.
With the orchid family? Yeah, yeah, it's quite an endeavor. And in most cases, there's at least a year, if not more, in the seed pod development period, too. So it's a really, really long endeavor. And you can wonder how orchids can be marketed, you know, at the inexpensive level that they are nowadays when there's that much time involved in producing them. But we do it. We've got thousands of little seedlings out at our place right now that are still in the flask, in the bottle. It's just really neat to see that. And we're daily taking them out and planting them. And we have another scheduled group of plants coming out of the little seedling trays, getting put into their individual pots for the first time. So it's a huge production, and it's very slow. And it's, once you've got your mature plant, though, you've got one for life. These plants will live indefinitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Barb.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it very much. And we have open lines now. We can get you on at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Boy, Ed posted a photo on our Facebook page. What do we got there? Beautiful orchid?
That's a beautiful Phalaenopsis cultivar for sure. Yeah, one of what's called the candy stripe.
That's a beautiful.
Yeah, you've basically got your white background with the striping or veining overlay. Yeah, those are very, very popular. Really great, great color definition on that. Really nice job.
I like that. That's on my Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. Email from Mary, wondering about temperatures again. How cool should that? My nighttime temperature is 63. Daytime is 68 when I'm home. Should it be cooler than that?
Well, really depending upon what she's growing. But, you know, she's right in that ballpark average where she can certainly culture a whole lot of orchids with that successfully. And, you know, you do have those spikes where it's a little cooler and those spikes where it's a little warmer times, too, which is not a big deal. And that kind of all averages out. You know, Phalaenopsis respond to the average house conditions, which she's describing there, just fine in most cases. And if you have a stubborn plant that's not setting a spike, then you got to drop that night temperature a little bit farther. You know, sometimes down to 55 will do it. But in most cases, she's right in
right
the ballpark.
About there.
You bet. Yeah.
An email from Paul, who would like you to talk about the ecology of orchids and why they seem to bloom out of season. Most flowering plants bloom during the warmer months with lengthening or decreasing light periods. Many orchids bloom during the coldest season and the shortest light periods.
Yeah, very, very true. Well, a lot of these plants do come from south of the equator, so they are a little bit used to a whole different kind of season down there. But, you know, through the years of hybridizing, a lot of these plants have become accustomed to flowering on our seasons now. But really the main reason why a lot of the orchids in our part or in the whole basically North America bloom in the wintertime is because they do respond to the shortening of the day length and or the cooling of the climate from the summer's heat. So those are really the two things that get these things going. And for the most part, you know, if you can modify that a little bit, we have conditions at our greenhouse where we can inhibit things to flower, you know, and hold them back, make them bloom totally out of season, or, you know, bring them into season when they wouldn't be. So we can mess around with that a little bit with temperature and light levels and so on. And that's really basically about it.
Yeah. A Facebook question from Jayla, who says, I have a dendrobium. Oh, Kingianum,
yeah.
Dendrobium Kingianum, which hasn't bloomed since I bought it 4 years ago.
Okay, yeah, that one likes it very cool. So I think it might be a little bit too late now, but you could still try it. You know, that plant could tolerate near freezing conditions at night and daytime and nighttime right now. It's really best to start that already in December, though. A really, really cool growing orchids comes from the higher elevations. Where's Kingianum from right off the bat? Burma or something like that in Nepal. But anyway, it is a high elevation, likes it very cool. You start that in December, basically threaten to freeze the darn thing, keep it really dry and really cold. And a couple of months of that and start watering and warming it up again, and you'll see those little bloom spikesy birds. So that plant needs a dramatic change in its culture to get it to flower. That's about it.
Marion and Madison, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. I'm an amateur orchid grower. I do have three different kinds. I have a Phalaenopsis, a Dendrobium, and an Anthurium. And they actually have all bloomed this year.
Good.
But my question for you is about the Phalaenopsis, because I've had this one for about 4 years now. And even though I have repotted it either every year or every other year, it constantly sends root tendrils out over the pot all the time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know why it does that.
Well, the Phalaenopsis does have a fairly active air root system. That's very common to have that, and it's actually a good thing. It shows that your plant is very happy and cultured very well, and your humidity and your watering practices are good to keep those roots, you know, alive and striving. So, you know, is it flowering religiously, you said, now, or?
Yeah, the Phalaenopsis usually has been. Well, I've got a garden window that faces north and maybe a little bit east.
Okay.
And I've had it in that, and it's flowered twice a year.
Okay, good, Good. Yeah, well, you've definitely got an ideal situation there for growing and flowering the Phalaenopsis, and it's responding to it. You know, putting out those air roots like that is just basically the atmosphere is spot on perfect for it, so you really can't ask for more than that.
That's why there's a lot of humidity right there above the kitchen sink.
Yeah, yep, it's loving that humidity and that climate, you know, and when you're doing the right thing, when you repot it, you tuck those roots in the pot, cover it up with the potting medium, and, you know, 4, 5, 6 months later, they come crawling back out or make new ones, and that's really what you want to see, so.
Yep.
Why it does that, and that's just a normal process.
That is. They have a very active aerial root system, and you're seeing it for sure.
Yeah. Thanks, Marianne. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Having fun today talking with Chuck Aker. Chuck is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, talking with him about orchids and about the Orchid Quest, which is February 2nd and 3rd at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. Great to have him along to talk about orchids there. So many beautiful ones in bloom right now. I hope you'll go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll find out more about Chuck's business and also about Orchid Quest. Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking orchids today on this edition of Garden Talk. Don't they bring almost an exotic flair, I think, to a home or an office? And those blooms can be wonderfully long-lasting. But there's a little bit of work that goes with keeping them going. And Chuck Aker, expert on orchids, he's with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee, our guest. He also propagates and sells orchids through his own business. It's called Flasks by Chuck Aker. And with us until 12:30 today to answer your questions. Chuck, always great. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure to share the time with you and your listeners, Larry.
We have, you know, the Facebook page is always fun, and I asked for photos on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and Margaret just sent up. She says, is bragging permitted? This photo, she said, these opened for me over the holidays.
Wow.
These are one of my favorites. And oh, man, are they beautiful.
Yeah, she's got a pair of Paphiopedilum flowers there in this image and a very, very nice display, both facing the same direction. And very beautifully grown and beautifully presented. Way to go, Margaret. Nice, nice job. Paphiopedilum flower, like that particular variety, is considered the complex hybrid family. And those flowers, if you would reach out, touch one, they're like wax. They're almost like they're just carved out of wax. And they can stay into bloom for 2.5, 3 months in some cases. Really interesting flower. Just touching one is so cool. And right now is their season, so she's spot on with that. Nice job.
Beautiful. And Tiffany sent us a note. She says, working in the floral industry, I have, of course, heard of your shop.
Oh, yeah.
And she wonders if she'd like to go and see it, wondering if you give tours. Everything I hear and see is stunning.
Well, absolutely, we book tours, and this time of the year, of course, is really, really recommended because of the amount of things flowering. In between now and Mother's Day, we take tours. Right around that time, Mother's Day, we try to avoid the situation because it gets a little bit overwhelming.
Like a little hectic.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is really good time. You know, February, March, April, honestly, is really the best time to see the orchids in their glory at our place. So if she wants to book a tour and tell her to give us a call, and we'll set something up. And we have a real easily accessible place for buses. I mean, we bring people in 45, 50 at a time, no problem.
Yeah, and it's a very large. I mean, you've got a huge operation. I've been out there, and it really is really something to see, especially when all those orchids are flowering. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yep, that's what's happening now, that's for sure.
Mary in Oshkosh, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I do have a question, but you have to promise not to laugh at me. I'm about the dumbest orchid owner alive.
Oh, no.
But, I thought I was doing a wonderful thing for my orchid, and I repotted it about a week ago.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't realize that all of those things coming out of it were roots.
Uh-huh.
And I just learned that from listening to your program this morning, that they're aerial roots.
Uh-huh.
I thought they were just like little tendrils. So I chopped them all back to about 2 inches.
Okay.
When I repotted it and put them all under the ground.
Okay.
Is that going to kill the plant because they chop those roots back?
No, no. I, you know, to be honest with you, we do some of that same practice at the greenhouse occasionally. yeah, you sheared them back a little far, but yeah, the rule of thumb is to don't shear them off at all unless they're really long. My rule of thumb basically is if the roots are longer than the depth of the pot that they're going in, then of course shear them back to just slightly shorter than the depth of the pot, so you're just not cramming them all in there. But, you know, we've practiced that, repotting our Phalaenopsis orchids for years, you know, and I don't see it to be an issue at all. The thing that you're going to want to do right after repotting in a situation like you have there is to make sure that you don't overwater it right off the get-go here. So be careful with that. Misting the plant daily in the morning will really help keep the plant hydrated until your roots start to become active again. And it'll only take about 4 to 6 weeks and your roots will become active again. But, you know, water it, you know, normally but sparingly. I mean, normally, I mean, let it dry out before you do water, but water it sparingly. Don't soak the bejeebers out of the pot. But that daily misting will really help keep the leaves, the foliage, hydrated well until the roots pick up action. So, no, you should be fine there.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate it, Mary. And Carl in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, hello. I think I'll take over for Mary as perhaps the dumbest orchid owner. Actually, my wife and I are not really very much plant people, and we got a bonsai tree recently, and that's kind of made us a little bit more attentive and caring, and that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, so good.
I picked up my wife an orchid at a local grocery, and I don't know what it's called. It's about 16 or 18 inches high, and it has these beautiful blooms that are, oh, I don't know, about the size perhaps of an egg, and they have these two lobes on the sides and a little pale yellow center. But anyway, I was told, you know, to put 3 ice cubes in there, and that would be the watering. So I had a couple of quick questions. One was just about the watering, but more importantly, I'm also a beginning fly fisher, and I was practice casting in my living room with a little practice casting pole with a piece of yarn on it, and I sheared off part of one of the orchid bloom's ears, one of the lobes on the side, right in half, and I just felt awful because it's a beautiful plant. We've had it for about, oh, I don't know, a couple of months now, and the blooms have just been wonderful. It's been as healthy looking as it was when we got it, and after listening to all of the delicate procedure you guys go through to grow these things, I thought, man, I really need to take care of this guy, and I don't know what to do with that bloom. Do I just leave it alone, or can I nip that one off, or what do I do?
Well, pretty much leave it alone. If you see some parts that have been, you know, semi-severed that aren't completely, you know, detached, you may want to just clean that up with a scissors or a razor blade or something, you know, just so it aesthetically, you know, looks better. But no, there really isn't anything you can do. And be honest with you, when I'm carrying orchids around in the greenhouse like that and restocking, it's not uncommon for me or my coworkers or customers even to have situations like that happen. So don't feel bad. The flower is still going to, you know, continue to hang on for its normal blooming longevity anyway, despite, you know, some physical damage. So,
okay.
No, you're doing fine there. Enjoy the thing. Follow your directions on what you're to do with it as far as your watering and so on. And that'll bloom for months when it's through flowering. Cut the stem off, just basically cutting off only the section of that stem that actually had bore the flowers. So essentially you're going to leave, you know, what's essence of a stick in there. And then that stick, that section of that stem that you're leaving on the plant's going to reflower for you. And they usually do that in about 60 or 90 days. So, yeah, check our website, orchidsgardencenter.com. It's got great care instruction sheet for growing the Phalaenopsis orchid. We do watering a little bit different than the ice cube method, but regardless, you'll pick up some other great growing tips there as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email from Josh in Duluth, Minnesota. I've pollinated the flowers on my dendrobium Forbici?
Forbici.
Forbici, is that how it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
How long will it take for the pod to mature?
Well, in general, I think the Dendrobium genera family of plants there is running about 9 months. You can probably find some specific information on the Forbici maybe on the internet. But what we typically do with a lot of our seed pods at the greenhouse is once they're pollinated, we'll put the date on a tag and tie it on to that inflorescence where that pollinated flower is. And we'll just watch it. And through the months, you know, you kind of look back and you see, oh, this was pollinated, you know, last September. And you just kind of keep an eye on it. We actually prefer to let the seed pods go completely mature, meaning that they're going to turn from that, you know, beautiful, lush, healthy green to, you know, starting to die off a little bit, turning yellow and possibly even just start to split right at the end or something. And that's the time that you're going to want to harvest it and get it sent off to the lab for flasking, unless you're going to do it yourself. Some labs like to have the seed pod still green, meaning that it has not ripened fully and has not split open. And the reason being, that way the seed inside is still sterile and they don't have to sterilize it, because sometimes sterilizing the orchid seed actually damages some of the embryos and subsequently you get less germination. But most modern labs nowadays can really sterilize pretty much any orchid seed successfully without too much damage. So either way, I just watch it about 9 months and go from there.
Kurt in Decorah, Iowa. Hello.
Good morning. Question for your guest. I have about a six-year-old Yerba Buena, Acres Pinnacle.
Sure.
And it's in a proper orchid pot.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple of years, it has pushed out three flower shoots. Just before the flowers start to open, they've died.
Oh.
It sits in a cool house. I heat with wood heat.
Okay.
I wonder if I need more moisture. And I, a couple callers ago, you talked about misting. Does this mm-hmm. orchid need a misting deal?
Well,
repot it also.
Yeah, you know, that whole wood heat thing might be drying your air out a little bit excessively, and that is a concern. The other thing I concern about is it if it's close in proximity to your wood burning source.
No,
that
it is
okay.
Not.
Well, we can rule out any of the, you know, the pollutants and so on that are associated with that. Often we'll see folks, when they start their fireplace and things like that, that you will see some bud drop on a Phalaenopsis or something of the sort. And that's always an issue at this time of the year. But I would think that maybe it would be more so your dryness of the air, setting that up on a humidity tray and letting it sit above the water so it can constantly evaporate.
Okay.
Make sure that it's not in too bright a light either when they're in bud like that.
Oh, really?
That type of Paphiopedilum slipper orchid is very low light orchid at that time of its development. So when it's in the budding stage, you know, it's pretty dim light, and that way the buds don't overheat too. So for growing purposes, they like a lot of light, which you obviously are giving it because it's really growing well and sending up its flowers well.
Yeah.
But right about that bud time, you got to keep it out of that sun and make sure that it stays relatively shaded. And that sometimes falls true with a lot of the other orchid families as well. Phalaenopsis get a little bit sensitive to that, especially in the winter now. You know, all of a sudden we get snow on the ground, the light level just goes up dramatically. The plant really isn't accustomed to that, so that can be a bit shocking to them at that sensitive stage of bud development. But I think basically your dryness of the air might be your biggest culprit there.
Mm. And what you just said, as soon as it flowers, I put it close to a window. thank you very much. I think you've answered.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling, Kurt. All right. Shirley in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I have a couple questions. One is about watering. I was told at an orchid workshop I went to at Olbrich a couple years ago that RO water, osmosis water, was the water for orchids. Don't use tap water. Use RO water. Is that accurate?
Well, somewhat. As I stated earlier, the more purified water sources are generally recommended for the orchids, for the most part. The mineral that's found in our water here in the Madison area is quite high for the most part, depending on, you know, where you are. I personally live in Fitchburg, and our mineral is not too bad there, but where we are in Middleton at the greenhouse, we have terrible mineral.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it really has a little bit to do with that. If you are going to use reverse osmosis exclusively for your watering purposes, then you need to formulate your fertilizer accordingly. So you'll have to actually purchase a fertilizer that's blended for the use with RO water.
Oh, and I didn't know that. I've just been using my regular bright blue fertilizer.
Yeah, because you'll get into an issue where there's no calcium and magnesium supplementation with the fertilizer, and of course there's none in your RO water. So the plants, it's not going to kill them or anything, but eventually they start to wane out a little bit. They don't get that.
So I need to look for a fertilizer that's specially formulated for use with RO water.
Yes, that's one option. Your other option would be to mix about 20% of that tap water that you have with your reverse osmosis, so you've got at 80% RO, 20% tap, and then you can use your basic fertilizer that you're using right now, because you'll get enough calcium, magnesium, and other natural minerals from that little bit of tap water. So that's actually exactly what we do at the greenhouse in production, as we mix water. So
that's good news. So fewer refill trips to the grocery store.
There you go.
There you go.
And one other question, and in a sense it's a comment, at that same workshop, two or three years ago, the woman who was doing the presenting said, do not mist your orchids.
Mm-hmm.
Do not mist them. And I thought I just heard you tell another caller that misting was something she should be doing.
Yeah, misting is highly recommended in our household climate, you know, especially now this time of the year when your heat is on and you may not have an adequately humidified system, or if you've got, you know, the hydronic hot water heating systems, there's no, you know, humidification involved with that. You know, that's time of the year where the orchids can benefit from a little bit of that. The one thing we see, though, is the people do a little bit too much of it, and then all of a sudden the plant gets essentially overwatered. So it's a basic, just a very light misting on the foliage, and generally doing that, you know, in the morning as your day starts, you know, just a little spritzing here and there. A lot of orchids benefit from that, or that good transpiration through the leaf stoma. And the other thing you can do to create humidity too is to set them up on a humidity tray, which is basically just a tray with a grid or some gravel or decorative marbles in it, some water down at the base. Just make sure that the pot is not standing in the water so it doesn't absorb up through there and rot the bottom. But, you know, this is time of the year where the orchids will benefit the most from that extra humidification, misting, or a humidity tray. It's not so bad in the summer. We've got plenty of humidity in Wisconsin then, so that's you don't have to do it then.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Just to go back to the ice cubes a little bit, you know, that's sort of a, I don't know if it's controversial, but some people say swear by it, and others say, well, that's not maybe the best way.
Right, yeah, it's highly controversial. Well, the thing of it is the company that's marketing the orchids and recommending that, they have a program, their pot dimension, their potting substrate, and the type of orchid that is planted in that pot all work together with that watering program. So it is quite ingenious. It's taken the fear out of the watering the orchid situation, because it really is one of the more apprehensive aspects about growing orchids, and we see people struggling with it the most out of anything to do with growing the orchid. So I have to commend that particular entity for coming up with that whole system, but not all the orchids that you purchase out on the market are going to be applicable to that watering technique. And some of the other things we see with that, you know, with people bring up the point of the cold, you know, you set that ice cube on this aerial root, and it's, you know, right there and it's freezing. You know, is that really that good for it? Well, we don't see it doing any damage, so apparently the plant can tolerate that. But, you know, it's just a real different aspect, a very unorthodox way of going about watering something you think comes from a warm tropical jungle atmosphere. But again, it's all formulated together to work with this particular company's product. We particularly recommend to water the orchids thoroughly at the sink or at a basin or somewhere where you can let the water run through the pot to flush, you know, and the flushing is good. Flushing brings in oxygenation. It brings in ion exchange. It really just freshens up the roots and it allows everything to get replenished. And that's basically how they grow in nature on the trees. So that's our practice.
You brought along a book with you called The Scent of Scandal.
I did. Yes. The Scent of Scandal, a book written by a gentleman down in St. Petersburg, Florida. And it talks immensely. He writes immensely about the discovery of Phragmopedium kovakii, which was discovered in Peru 2002, which I was fairly highly involved with at that time. So I'm actually in the book. So it's kind of interesting that I got played in there as myself. The gentleman that writes is a very good writer. He has depicted the whole shenanigans that went on with the collecting and somewhat smuggling of this new orchid species into the United States, which, again, back to your Indiana Jones comment, it's really almost exactly like that. The lengths that some people will go through to obtain some of these new species when they're discovered. I, however, along with a very good friend of mine, Jerry Fisher from Orchids Limited in Plymouth, Minnesota, we went the legal route and we went to Peru and bought our plants legally and were the first two U.S. nurseries to have the orchids and grow them. So we're pretty excited about that. But yeah, the book is pretty interesting reading. There's a lot of people in high power down in Florida associated with Selby Botanical Gardens that got themselves into some hot water over that and many other people. And very interesting read. So yeah, I'd highly recommend it if you're into stories like that. It's a great book.
The Scent of Scandal. And then we've got No Scent of Scandal, according with the Orchid Growers Guild. I know that for sure.
That's for sure.
February 2nd and February 3rd, we've got Orchid Quest 2013.
Absolutely. One of the best shows in the area, and it's a great time to come out. Cold, and you come into that area and smell the fragrance in that exhibit room, you'll just be totally blown away. It's an amazing event.
It is an amazing event. Again, it's February 2nd and 3rd at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. There's displays, there's vendors, there's artworks, there's seminars, there's an auction, there's a raffle, and you can walk away with some beautiful orchids, and not only the orchids, but all of the fertilizers and all the other things that go along with pots that go along with growing orchids. So it's really a lot of fun. And Chuck, thanks again so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you are very welcome, Larry. It's a pleasure.
We'll have him back. Chuck Aker is with Orchids Garden Center and Nursery in Wanakee. He also propagates and sells orchids through his own business. We should have talked more about that next time. I promise we will. It's called Flasks by Chuck Aker. We've got some information up on my Facebook page. You can get a link there to both those businesses, to their Facebook, to their websites. Just go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'll click you right on to it. Monday, we'll take a look at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and talk a little bit about some challenges that they're facing and our wetlands are facing. Thanks for listening. The weather guys will come along as well on Monday. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.